January 28, 2006. You're listening to Nowhere in Mulberry, episode 22, The Double Deuce.
I'm going to say masturbating a minute. Am I allowed?
Yes, you are. Hey, welcome, everybody. It's episode 22 of Nowhere in Mulberry, The Double Deuce. And with me, I have on my left, is pop culture zealot Steven. How are you doing, Steven? Are you doing fantastic?
Doing fantastic. A little lagged, but good now.
Fantastic. All right. We also have with us Mulberry Bill. Right now, are you at home in your library right now, or are you somewhere else?
I'm at home.
Oh, good.
I wouldn't be anywhere else for this show but home.
Right.
I refuse to come across town to the studio.
Yeah, what is it like agoraphobia or something like that?
No, it's not agoraphobia, but...
Agoraphobia?
I just don't like
fear
being
of agriculture.
Around Stephen.
It is agoraphobia.
Yeah, Stephen breathes on me. I don't like that.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
It's kind of hot.
I actually have a plastic shield between us. Just for that. And I looked over and I can't even see Steven because it's all fogged up.
if I had a steam bath, I would go to one. I don't want Steven to give it to me.
Hey, and that female laughing over there, that must be Vanessa. How's it going, Vanessa?
It's going well.
Vanessa, you haven't been in the studio for a while either. What's the deal? Why do you like to do the show from your home? Is it just easier to make sandwiches and stuff?
Yes, I can make sandwiches.
She also doesn't have to wear pants.
That's right. A necessity for doing shows.
We got a new voicemail, just like right before the show started, so I haven't had time to listen to it. I don't know what it is. Do you guys think I should go ahead and play it? Okay, let's check it out. Let's see who it is.
Hey, Mulberry guys, this is Eugene. And I just want to call and tell you I'm sorry about last time when I got upset and all. I wanted to share some new stuff with you. I heard that Josh is going to be doing a second season of Firefly.
I'm really excited about
that. And I wanted to, you know, one of the things I love to do most is fan fiction. And I've written lots of fan fiction before for shows like Knight Rider and Misfits of Science. I love that
Misfits
show.
Misfits of Science. But, show rock.
And I did. I even wrote a full screenplay for an episode of BJ and the Bear. I called it BJ the Bear Future Kill. But it was great. Nothing ever happened with it, but I tried to send it in. And anyways, since there's going to be a second season of Firefly, I wanted to do a thing. And I wrote some, and I wanted to read and see what you thought. Okay, here it goes. Firefly fan fiction. Gene Starkiller settled into his bunk, tired from a long day of cattle wrestling with shipmates Gene Cobb and Captain Mal Reynolds. His muscles slowly ached as the cool of the Serenity's space air conditioner blew over his buckled skin. The short knock on his cabin door woke him out of a brief sleep with avarice. What could it be? Had River returned to love him through the night again, so like he had so many...
Apparently his character slept with the whole crew.
Or was it Zoe, who being recently widowed, probably needed comforting for a broken heart? Making it to his feet, he opened the door and was taken aback by the strong scent of love permeating his open door space. No, not River, Zoe, Kaylee, or even the gorgeous Inara, but the new recruit, Vanessa. Before he knew it, they were in the bunk together.
Oh, God.
Slowly caressing and over her supple skin and long, wet kisses and... Alert! Alert! All hands to stations! We have Reavers! And then, you know, Reavers show up and they're led by the most evil Reaver, Reaver Bill. And then I haven't written this down, but then he kidnaps new recruit, Space Cadet Vanessa, the Space lovely Cadet. Vanessa, takes her away, and I get to stand up and yell, "Damn you, Reaver Bill!" So anyways, it's just kind of funny. I thought maybe Josh would buy it, and I'll send it in to Josh, and maybe we could turn it into a script or something. So, maybe...
Don't hold your breath down.
Vanessa, you
I say finish
me,
writing the script,
and
Eugene.
We can practice some of the lines and stuff. And I sent you my number on the email, so... you know, don't you laugh at me, Mulberry Bell. You and I just need to maybe come to blows, Mulberry Bell. Damn it. Damn it.
Why did he call us? Was he just really lonely? What the hell is going on here?
I think he's calling the wrong person. He needs to start calling...
I'm going to give him Vanessa's home phone number. That's what I need to do. Oh,
check out line author Nora Roberts, who writes the romance books. I think that's who he needs to get in contact with.
I did... You know, it was pretty bad fan fiction, and there's nothing worse than fan fiction. Someone writing about themselves in with the characters that they like... You know, it's like he wrote himself as one of the people on the ship with Mal Reynolds.
I like that he shortens his name to Gene.
Yeah, Gene Starkiller, and he's laying in his bunk with the trendy space air conditioner. I got
Starkiller.
And something about avarice.
Journal of the Wills while he...
Journal of the Wills. Yeah.
Killer.
But Vanessa, awesome. You got to be flattered by that. He wrote you into Firefly. You show up on the ship. What do you think about that?
Yeah, but then he starts buckling skin and...
caressing.
Over his muscular skin.
But then Reaver Bill shows up and...
Damn you, Bill.
He's got it out for you, Bill.
I just like to
Reaver
know how...
Reaver Bill!
Was I on Miranda, or was I a recruited Reaver? I want the backstory.
Yeah.
You know, don't you laugh at me, Mulberry Bell.
I'm not going to laugh at you anymore. It's tragic. I'm sad for him.
Eugene,
we need Reaver Bill backstory.
I don't understand why Eugene called into our show. He doesn't seem to like us. I know he likes Vanessa, but maybe he's trying to impress you, Vanessa, with his writing.
No, he likes us. He just doesn't like Bill.
I think we're encouraging him. We need to stop playing the call.
You and I just need to maybe come to blows. Damn you, Reaver Bill!
Okay, Foggy. On that note, guys, with Eugene, I don't know. After that, I need to lay down. Let's do entertainment.
Go ahead. Make my day.
All right, everybody. Before we get to our favorite TV shows on What's on Your TiVo, I want to talk about a new movie that's coming out soon. I saw a commercial to it, and I decided I wanted to talk about it. And now, Hollywood has produced a lot of remakes lately. Not only just previous movies, but also TV shows. And when I saw this, part of me died inside. And let's check it out.
Its name is legendary. They call it the Pink Panther. It's the most famous diamond in the world. And now, it's been stolen. And there's only
one. Is this a tragic crime, you guys?
Officer Jacques
Legeux,
gendarme, third class.
I love Steve Martin, but why, Steve? Why?
Steve Martin is Inspector Clouseau.
February 10th, Steve Martin is...
And this song makes me not want to see it. It makes me want to shop at Target.
of what I can do.
Look out!
Never mind.
His approach.
Ha! What? Who? Why?
Without warning.
Who was asking for this? Was it you, Jason? This time it was your fault. I think Eugene wrote this. It was fan fiction.
Good one.
Thank you.
And his accent.
Hello?
Is unmistakable.
Something amusing.
I find your accent quite funny.
What?
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 I don't have time for this. I have to study murder.
From MGM and Columbia Pictures.
I see they're following Trailer Music 101.
He wasn't born to greatness.
Inspector?
Hello?
But he just might stumble across it.
I know, we've already seen the movie!
We need fresh towels and 204.
The Pink Panther.
I'm going to America. I'm going up to London to speak with that flawless American accent.
I would like to buy a hamburger.
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 A hamburger.
I would like
why,
to buy a hamburger.
Steven? Why?
I would like to buy a hamburger.
You did this!
Such a fan of Steve Martin, I said, what if he was Clouseau?
What? Why did they do this? Screw you, Steve Martin.
Excuse me!
Lake Edwards bag empty? Here's a bag. Yeah, when I saw Beyonce in it, I was like, oh, I see a boardroom of executives casted this movie.
Right.
Okay, I see.
Exactly.
Oh, what do you think about Beyonce? She's
really
pretty.
Good.
She was great and a gold member. I made a ton of money.
All right, let's sign her.
Yeah,
all right.
I can only hope this is just paycheck.
Yeah, I would hope so because it makes me want to...
Peel your skin off?
Yes, exactly.
What is this, bee all of a sudden?
Yeah, I'm going to eat a rat and then peel part of my cheek off to reveal lizard scales. And then me and Diana are going to, I can't air that on the air.
No, okay, guys, let's talk about what's on your TiVo.
All right, guys, before we get into our regular shows that we know and love, like Smallville and Veronica Mars 24, okay, this is kind of a sad story, but okay, here's what happened. I was walking in with groceries and stuff, right? And I slipped on a banana peel, and Dancing with the Stars, just forget it. I was watching Dancing with the Stars. I'm a total homo, all right. But you know what's funny? Do you guys remember last week, the Final Countdown was a really huge part of our show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then you guys know who Lisa Rinna is, don't you?
Yeah, from Melrose Place.
Yeah, and she's got huge
lips that exploded.
Yeah, huge lips. And
I'm wondering, why was she famous? What did she, I mean...
She married Harry Hamlin, I think.
Wasn't she on General Hospital?
She was on Veronica Mars for a while, but she is on Dancing with the Stars this week, and when I saw what she danced to, I just laughed my ass off. Here's a clip of it.
The final countdown.
I was like, no way!
She was listening to our show.
Yeah. She's like, I love that song!
I just got that band's entirely too good. They should have got those kids.
Countdown. It's like the song's coming back, you guys.
We leave it together.
No! Oh, Jesus. No, thank you, Foggy. But speaking of bad music, American Idol was on. And terrorists were holding a gun to my head and forcing me to watch it until John McClane saved me. I have to admit, it's a horrible show. I don't watch it. But it was on. You know, you go to someone's house and you're saying,
train
hey.
Wreck.
And it's on and you sidle up to them on the couch. You know, they offer you a nice Chablis and, you know, maybe a Twinkie or something.
You get nice and relaxed and with your Twinkie and Chablis.
Yeah, and they're like, hey, I'm watching American Idol. I love the show. And you're
my
like, oh,
is
yeah,
the
me
boxed
too.
Merlot.
Yeah, the boxed Merlot and some turkey.
these poor people think they can sing, and here's an example of a guy, and I just thought it was funny.
It's human nature, why does he do me that way?
What?
They say why. No. Hold up. Remix.
Remix?
What?
Oh! Is it Jabba the Hutt he's performing?
I think so.
Wait for the hole to open, I'll fall down into the rancor pit.
Damn, he's pretty good.
Thank you.
Signed.
What the hell was that? What's the guy like? Hey, I'm gonna beatbox and get on American Idol. What the?
Those Scatman Carruthers.
But the one part that I thought was kind of homoerotic was this.
Does he do me that way?
He says, "Does he do me that way?"
Even Michael Jackson said, does she?
Yeah, he said, does he do me that way?
Oh, I guess he wants someone to do him that way.
I'm thinking so.
The guy was gay. Gay.
Thank you. All right, guys, you want to get into Smallville?
Sure. Let's go. Let's talk about Smallville.
All right, this is the 100th episode of Smallville.
Smallville Reckoning.
I love how on the commercials WB goes, Smallville, The Reckoning. It's
a
like
fresh
you're,
episode.
You're watching a motion picture. This isn't a TV show, man. This is something special. But anyway, the way this movie starts,
the movie,
it's The Reckoning, Steven. Yes. Smallville, The Reckoning, the movie. Clark, he's decided to tell Lana all about his superpowers and that he's an alien. Actually, he says, I'm from another planet. It doesn't explain any of his powers. He just flies for her.
Yeah.
And then he's like, also, and he's like, and he crushes a piece of coal and makes a fine cut diamond.
Perfectly cut.
That movie.
Bad. And then he mounts the diamond with his heat vision.
Yeah, awesome. And he makes her a ring. And I'm like, couldn't he do this for a living and make his parents lots of money? It's like, yeah, it's Kent's diamond mines. Or
what's with the storyline of them being so poor and not being able to support the farm? Why doesn't he just buy a coal mine?
Yeah. Hey, Dad, I'll just turn everything into diamonds. I can turn shit into diamonds. Hey, in that case, Clark, maybe you could mold the script into a fine diamond. So basically, she's like, you know, he's like, all right, I'll let you think about it. And then it cuts to him talking to Chloe. And he's walking in Chloe's work, and there's these loud coworkers, and you're like, what the hell's going on? This lady's like, oh my God, I got flowers! And this other guy's like, well, I quit. You can't fire me. And you're like, what the hell?
Why is this?
But and that then, is, that's ninth
grade. Calls to order Chinese from Chloe.
Yeah, and what that is, you guys, it's ninth grade creative writing foreshadowing for later on in the episode.
Want to learn how to foreshadow? There's the beginning of it.
So, oh, and there's this great part where Lois is reaching for some ding-dongs on a top shelf. It almost falls, but Lana catches her. And I love that she's reaching for ding-dongs. It's a delicious snack.
The show sounds great.
Cream-filled ding-dongs. Cream-filled. So anyway, she decides that she's going to marry her dad, and her dad...
Marry her dad?
No, wait. She decides she's going to marry Clark, and so they tell everyone. He's like, hey, I proposed to her, and I told her about my powers. And they're like, oh, okay.
Smallville, incestuous.
What I would have said to Clark about this... I would have said, Clark, I'm, like, worrying about the election right now. Don't bother me with your shit, all right?
Clark, why buy the cow when you can have the milk for free?
Yeah. Well, he can't because he's too scared.
He's scared.
He won't slap one out in the barn to see what happens. But anyway.
He can't put on that kryptonite condom.
Yeah.
In the barn.
So basically what happens is Jonathan Kent wins the election, and Lois announces it to everyone, and all of a sudden he gets a phone call, but we'll talk about that later. And all of a sudden Lana gets a phone call. Don't most candidates, they're at their place where all their supporters, and then they give their concession speech, but he's at home drinking some scotch, and basically he feels bad, and so she goes to cheer him up. And this is what happens.
Hey.
Something happens.
Okay, I was wondering.
Well, I guess it's a bigger day than I thought.
A dramatic pause.
You know, it happened so fast, we never really got a chance to tell anyone about it.
Yeah. Lex has always loved Lana.
Still chose him.
for no reason ever given.
You don't understand.
How many times have you come to me?
Huh?
Come on, you what?
Wondering what Clark's keeping from you.
It's Bina. I just like a guy with a full head of hair is all.
Disappeared to Metropolis for
it's
months.
It's your bald egg head, Lex. I don't
how
know how
rose
to tell
from
you
the dead.
It's not like that now.
Really?
His feasting on human flesh. That doesn't seem to bother you.
He showed me the world.
Anna?
He took me to his fortress of solitude. We were alone together.
You'd never say yes with all the doubts you have.
Apparently they're in a church. They're in a church that's this organ.
Whatever it is he's been covering up all this time.
It's very subdued.
You know, don't you?
Yes.
Stop. I'm gonna weep.
Lana? Where'd you go?
Oh, he here's knows. A...
I don't know how he could tell, but...
He could tell I was hiding your secret. I didn't say anything to him. But he got really angry.
This Lana, part is very dramatic.
Okay. But he's coming after me.
Lana?
He's running.
Lana! Lana! Just pull over so we can talk! Lana, watch out!
No! No! Wow.
Hello, Godzilla.
The car flipping like 45 times.
So, she got in a car wreck, you guys. And Lana's dead.
A freaking Learjet wreck, more like it.
And did you notice, Bill, that during the commercial break, it comes back. If you're just now tuning in, Lana has died. It's like, yeah. What? What the hell is
recap.
That? Yeah, thanks for the recap, WB. I always turn into Smallville 30 minutes into the show.
Yeah, just so I can get the first 30 minutes out of the way.
Yeah, what about other episodes where he just eats lunch, in case you just tuned in? Clark just had
a tuna fish sandwich.
Yeah. Oh, good, I'm caught up. Yay, thank you. But, so basically Lana dies, and basically what Clark always does, like a bitch, he blames Jor-El, his dead father, and goes back to the Fortress of Solitude to whine about it. And he's like, okay, son, one more chance. Here, you can reverse time, but there will be grave consequences, and you can never do this again, even though I said that last time, but this is the final one. So it's like,
the
okay.
Final countdown.
Yes, exactly. So basically what it shows him that...
the final countdown.
All right. So what happens is... The day starts over, and Lana shows up. She's like, hey, I'm in my coat and my muffler. What are we going to do? And he's like,
oh it's so nice to see you.
And he's like, the weather's not...
Oh, you're alive.
Let's just stay here.
And they only had enough material for 30 minutes, so they had,
yeah, they had to start it over again. So she's like, if you're not going to say something that's the truth, don't speak at all. And so he's just, like, sitting there, and he's like...
Then he turns into... Oh, shit.
So basically...
just fell right out of my head.
Landed on the floor somewhere.
Yeah.
So can't find it over there?
So basically, he never tells Lana, never proposes to her, so everything will be fine, right? Wrong. So what happens is, he tells Chloe, he goes to work to tell her what happened, and he goes...
She doesn't believe him.
She's like, you didn't go back in time. He goes, yes, I did. Watch, this girl's about to get flowers. She's like, oh, I got flowers! That guy over there is about to get fired. He's like, oh, you can't fire me, I quit! And then he's like, some Chinese food place is about to call you, or whatever. And that's what the foreshadowing was! Pat yourself on the back, 15-year-old creative writing student. So anyway, it cuts to the election party or whatever. And they're like, hey everybody, Jonathan Kent won! And he's like, wait, before Lois said, hey guys, I'm gonna go check on her. So he goes upstairs and she's unconscious on the floor because she reached for her ding-dongs and Lana was never there to catch her, so she hits her head on the floor.
And there was water coming towards a toaster,
the toaster.
To kill her.
And he picks her up.
So he saves her just before she gets electrocuted, so
right.
He's saved two lives now.
And while this was happening...
They don't have any ground fault interrupter circuits in that entire building.
Yeah. And that place is a restaurant. I don't think I'm going to be eating there. The place is dangerous. What happens is Lana moseys on off to Lex's again, because even though Chloe was supposed to be watching her, she did a shitty job at doing that. And this time, things are different, where actually Lex kisses her.
Lex lays a big old smooch on her.
And so she drives off all upset again. Ooh, boo, hoo, hoo. But
ooh,
this time,
Lex cooties.
This time, Clark goes super speed and stops the bus from crashing. And on that clip, she's like, Clark, I'm on highway so-and-so. I'm about to cross this street. I'm really upset. And Lex is after me. And I don't know what... He's like, dude, you're Superman. You could be there now. But instead, he's like, huh? What else is going on? What do you listen to on the radio?
So, well, is the final countdown on?
Yeah. It's like, couldn't he have gotten there like, bling? She told him exactly where she was. But anyway, she's saved, and Lex apologizes. She said, forget it happens. And right then, you see Jonathan Kent drive by, and you're like, what is he doing there? He's supposed to be,
he's supposed to be
party.
At the election
yeah,
party.
Yeah, what the hell is he doing driving a
He's going to get
truck.
Hit by a jumbo jet.
Well, what turns out is he's going to meet Lionel Luthor. Because remember, Lionel Luthor gave his wife the money for him to complete his campaign.
For a secret gay affair in the barn loft.
Right. And That's basically he I shows said. Up to say, there will be no cornholing. I'm giving you nothing.
I've got a picture of you cornholing a cow.
So he tries to blackmail him with...
That
is
can't
it?
Be right. I prefer sheep.
You know
oh,
when...
Wait.
He, Bill, you know when he has the photo and he shows it to him, the audience doesn't see it. Is it the ship that Clark landed in that
no,
he's showing?
No, it's called a MacGuffin.
Ah, there's nothing there. I gotcha. So, basically, he's like, no, I'm
Again,
not...
Again, excellent writing.
Yeah.
It's like they went back to the How to Write a Script book.
It's like, here's a whole bag of nothing for you.
So, basically,
Literally.
Jonathan's like, no, I'm not going to have any of that. Instead, I'm going to kick your ass. So, he starts beating him up. And he's like, us Kents, we stick together, not like you Luthors. And all of a sudden, he's like, ow! You know, he's got a pain in his left arm, so the audience knows he's about to have a heart attack. Here's what happens, you guys.
Dad?
Jonathan? Jonathan!
Dad? 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 Just sit down over here. Come on. Come on. Here, sit down.
Poor Jonathan.
Poor John Schneider. He just had a career resurgence.
Dad!
Oh my god!
He fell down a flight of stairs.
A couple of
But anyway, Jonathan's dead, and then there was this touching funeral scene at the end.
I was, you know, must be the whole father loss thing, but I think it was the way it was shot with the over-exaggerated snowflakes and the real bleak color palette, but the thing, the cherry on top was the Peter Gabriel song.
Yeah, and I mean, let's face it, Clark Kent's parents, they have hearts of gold, they're the parents you'd want, they're great people, and John Schneider's got a career again after the fiasco that was Dukes of Hazzard, and
well,
he's paying his mortgage off, and
he's a big Broadway actor now.
Yeah, and too bad he's off the show, so he's dead.
Back
but maybe
to Broadway
he'll
for you,
maybe
John
he'll appear
boy.
In ghost form, or you know, like
yeah, he'll be the Jor-El.
Flashbacks.
Yeah, like Clark will like be sitting in a car by himself and look over, and his dad's like, Clark, I remember when I was your age, and you know those kind of scenes. If I was a ninth grade creative writing student, I would totally write that into the show.
From Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Power corrupts absolutely, and, you know...
with great powers comes great responsibility.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So anyway, Smallville, great,
thumbs up.
Great episode.
Thumbs up.
So anyway, Veronica Mars returned this week, and it was a really good episode because Veronica Mars has been gone since, like, early December. Went on a Lost-type break. Basically, what it starts out is Duncan takes the baby
of his girlfriend who died because she has psycho religious parents and she was abused all her life, so she didn't want that to happen. So he takes the baby. Let me just play a clip. How about that?
Hi, Ho.
What did you say?
Oh, your uniform. Hi, Ho. It's off to work you go.
I guess that makes me Snow White.
You must be on your way up to see Mopey.
How's he doing, Sleazy?
Wouldn't know. He doesn't come out of his room. Old Italian ladies don't grieve like this. Boy, he must have really loved Meg.
Well, then there's that other thing. You know, he can't see his baby.
A baby? How'd that happen?
So basically what happens is her boyfriend kidnaps a baby and has disappeared. And before that happens, he dumps her in front of everyone at school. And so everyone thinks she's been dumped. And Xena shows up. And she's not going to take any of this Veronica Mars crap. She's a tough agent. But basically, in a nutshell, Veronica outsmarts everybody, and they get away with the baby, and most likely...
Including her dad, which pisses him off and says, I can never trust you again.
I will never trust you again, Veronica, because it turns out she claims her innocence the whole way, but she masterminded the whole plot. And the funniest thing, you know, okay, he got away with the baby. It was a good episode. At the very end, she reads this old fortune cookie that Duncan gave her. He's gone. He's probably off the show, or at least because he's hiding in Mexico. But she puts up the fortune cookie message on a mirror, and it says, great love stories never have ending. But if you notice right below that, the lottery numbers are the lost numbers. Did you notice that, Bill?
No, not until you told me.
And I guess that was a nice little dink. Like, hey guys, we come on the same time as you, and you get better ratings, even though your show is flying off the handle.
That's lost right now. The wheels are ready to come off.
On that note... Before we talk about the entire show, let's play a long clip that pretty much tells everybody everything.
Sawyer, when you were over there across the island... How well did you get to know those tailies?
Well enough, why?
That Libby chick seems pretty cool.
Whoa, you got a little love connection brewing over there, Jabba?
Jabba.
No, just asking.
Make a fat joke.
I'm coming, Aaron! It's okay!
Mom? This is Charlie's stupid dream.
What?
He's in danger. You have to save him.
Hey, let's beat the audience over the head with symbolism.
You have to save the baby.
Look at
that. You have to save the baby.
Save the baby.
What does Charlie need to do, you guys?
Why does he dream with British accents?
What are you doing, man?
Help! Somebody help my baby!
It's okay! We're over here!
I just dream.
What are your dreams about?
What? Variations of Aaron being in mortal peril. There's the flying dove and Claire and my mom dressed as angels telling me I need to save the baby.
Have you ever considered that these dreams mean something?
Yeah.
You have to baptize Aaron. We can do this, Echo's a priest. We can do this.
It's time
him.
To go.
No, wait, I'm not
I
finished.
Said it's time.
Let me drop kick him in the ocean.
Okay, turn around.
I'm not qualified at all, but I'll baptize this baby.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Come on, I'm a hobbit in the Shire. We're all licensed.
I'm disappointed in you, Charlie. You got the wrong idea, man.
You said you destroyed them all, and yet here they are. How is that the wrong idea?
This was one of the most annoying
scenes. I came out here to finish
episode.
The job. I'm going to get rid of these right now.
Yeah, that's very convenient now that I found them.
I would have said, dude, it's none of your goddamn business. Go away, you know.
Fuck, bite my ass. I'm a
she sees that, I'm done. She'll never trust me again, and she has to, John. It's about the baby. All right?
Aaron's I'm going to give danger. Heroin to the baby, John. It's a good idea.
That'll save it.
A dream told me to do it.
Start doing the heroin again and get off.
And this was a...
Ah!
I know, I'll start a fire to distract everyone. Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, threaten everyone else's life to save a baby.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Do what I have to do.
Kill my baby!
I'm going to drown
sorry,
him.
Sorry.
Please.
Give me the baby. I'm not going to hurt him.
You're hurting me, Charlie.
Oh, you're hurting me, Charlie. Oh, it's just
is
hot
she
up.
British too?
Who cares?
Do you really care? I don't care.
And then Locke beats the crap out of Charlie.
Yeah, okay, this episode, I'll tell you right now, this show is kind of annoying me, all right? Because
nuts.
The characters do not act like real people. I know it's a TV show, but they let me explain. They all act, like, they just react instantly to one little thing. He's like, maybe your dreams mean something. Eventually, maybe you'll have to save the baby. Not now. Sit and think about it. But he's like, oh, I gotta go start a fire and dump the baby in the ocean and give him a, you know, just like, who would behave like this? Okay, this is what Lost feels like to me. When Saeed shows up, it doesn't feel like he's been living there with them. It feels like the actor came on call for the day to film his one scene on this episode. Yeah. When, oh, look, there's Jack in this episode. He just drove up in his Ford Wrangler for an hour to film his scene, and then he'll be going off to the hotel.
Rodriguez.
Yeah, does it feel like everyone's doing cameos? I don't get the illusion that they're all living on an island anymore.
Not anymore, no.
It's
getting lazy.
It's getting really, really sloppy, and really, I mean, there are people... I called them Lost apologists after every episode. Well, that was a pretty damn good episode. It answered a lot of questions. It didn't answer a damn thing. They show Charlie's flashback. And once again, him and his brother, all right? They're recording commercial in diapers. But, yeah, his brother's a pain in the ass, and he just wanted to be with his brother, his family. You get it. Hey, Lost, you're hitting me over the head with this. Did you guys get that Charlie wants family? He needs family in his life, and his brother rejected him, pretty much shit on him?
No, why would I ever get that? It was
Because this is the second episode where they've told us that. And his dreams, let's get to his dreams. Okay, there's such a thing as like a dream or vision or whatever that we've seen. This was the most ridiculous thing. You know, first the baby's floating in the water. I guess he's like baby Moses, and he saves him.
Well,
and then...
no, first wasn't he in the piano crying?
Yeah. Right, he's in the piano. The symbolism was ridiculous, all right? And the Echo character, come on, dude, give me a break, you know?
So the piano with the baby inside was like his brother selling his piano. That's part of his family.
Yeah, symbolic, I guess.
It's all being symbolic.
And it's like, the island is testing Charlie. I don't care. And I'll sum it up like this. At the very end, they show a scene to next week. Son gets kidnapped. And my wife said, who do you think takes Son? And I just looked at her and I said, I don't care. I don't care anymore. I don't give a shit if an atom bomb hits the island. Who cares?
He's got to find another show
not
to watch.
On next week.
Yeah, and
the leader already say, if you don't screw with us, we won't screw with you.
Yeah, so obviously it's something else. And don't, I mean, if you listen to this, you're like, oh man, Jason really hates Lost. I don't hate Lost. I loved season one. There might have been a few episodes where it was like, okay, they kind of just, they're stretching things out.
And everything.
But this season has not been good. There have been a couple of good episodes. I really like the initiation episode or the orientation video one. That was pretty entertaining. And the Echo one wasn't bad. You know, there's been some entertaining ones. But all in all, it's been a very aggravating season. I just feel like the show is not going anywhere. They're going to build... It's going to build up to something. But do you guys like any of the characters that you liked last season anymore?
No.
Jack acts like a friggin' tool.
Like characters anymore. They're caricatures.
Yeah, it's Sawyer doesn't do anything. He makes little smarmy, he's like, hey, Jabba, you got a little love connection there? And everybody's like, oh, we got our Sawyer fix this week. Yes! All right, then. Punch out, Sawyer. You can go home for the rest of the week. That's your only scene
in
the show.
There's your 10 grand.
Yeah. But it's like...
What's insane is he was the favorite on the show, and they barely show him anymore.
Because... they need to fire Eugene and get some real writers in there is what I'm going to think.
Aw, oh, poor Eugene.
But I will talk about a new show. That's it for Lost, so go to hell, Lost. Let's talk about 24. All right, at the end of the last episode, Jack kills the zombies in the airport. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah,
I think you're watching a different episode than me.
And Jack shows up to CTU, and of course, immediately Samwise tells him, "Hey, we don't think you killed anybody. Everything's good. You know,
you're still a great agent.
Feel free to make a sandwich in the kitchen. You know, you're welcome to...
The agent
he, what does he get him, security level pass 2 or something? He's like, all right. So Jack is back at CTU. And meanwhile, Chloe, I don't think we mentioned this, in the first episode, Chloe had just gotten out of bed. She had sex with a coworker. Do you guys you guys remember that?
I wonder if she makes her pouty face during sex, too.
Right. I don't remember the guy's name. I'm sure she pouts.
She doesn't either.
Say, cold fish.
Now, what happens is it turns out this guy is a mole. What I love about this season so far is they've already done certain storylines that they stretched out forever in previous season, like Jack is framed. They got rid of that in one episode. Introduced it, got rid of it. And this one, they introduced the mole. Introduced it, got rid of it in the same episode. Don't you guys like that they're doing this? They're kind of playing with the audience of stuff they've already done.
Faster.
Yes, they are.
They're not dwelling on one topic for more than an episode.
Right, and that's what always drove me nuts. And it has happened almost every season where Jack is framed and the cops are after him. You guys remember last season where he held up the liquor store to distract?
Yes.
Oh, God, that was so funny.
That lasted like 2 episodes.
Yeah, it was like, when are they going to get Jack out of this liquor store? We don't care. Get him out of the liquor store.
Wasn't it? It was a gun store, wasn't it? With the two
Iraqi
kids?
It was a convenience
store.
It was
a 7-Eleven. The terrorist goes in there, and he needs to keep the terrorist there to stall him. So he decides to rob the store to keep him there. He holds it up and gets all the money out of the cash register, and he's got a ski mask. That
lasted way too long.
That was genius. So what happens in this is, I can't remember the guy's name. I should take notes, but hey, I don't. So Chloe lets Andrew, is that his name? The mole lets a professional inside, a cleaner, as they call him in the business, Steve, and I know all about that.
I told you. No, I can't tell you.
But what's great is they tell Jack that Tony's awake.
I'll
you need to go downstairs and talk to him. So he goes down there, and it turns out it's the hitman posing as the doctor.
And the way he discovers it was just classic bad 24 great writing.
Where he looks in the monitor and sees the reflection of him pulling the gun.
like any true hitman assassin would let that happen.
Wouldn't,
I know.
Like, he would have just walked in and goes, I'm Jack Bauer. Yeah. Show's over. But the hitman has a whole routine plan. He even says, remember, don't let him talk very much. He's really out of it or whatever. You know, he's like, oh,
he's trying
yeah.
to get him to lean over there
okay,
close
Doc.
To listen.
But I love that. The reflection, the gun pulled out. I think that's like James Bond always sees a reflection.
It's classic 24.
But the cool part about that, of course, what always happens is he kicks the assassin's ass and then jams scissors right into his jaw, like into his neck. But I love it.
Gives it that second push.
Yeah, he stabs him in the throat and then he goes, jam, like, jaw!
Take that!
That was awesome, wasn't it?
Great.
That was one of those moments that I love Jack Bauer. I love he kills people all the time.
Again, another classic 24 moment that just makes you go, oh, yeah.
Yes, a scissor death, which we all need more scissor deaths on TV.
Surgical scissor death.
Yeah, surgical.
Those things are ultra sharp.
And I guess Tony was never awake in the first place. He just did that to get him down here. Oh, you mean Tony's not even awake? Oh.
Can't even talk to Tony, my bud.
So anyway, of course, Jack is pissed off. And he goes upstairs to talk to the mole, and he's like, look at this! This is the result of what you've done! Who are you working for? And he says he's working for that guy, Walt Cummins, who works with the president. Is he, like, the president's assistant? Who is that guy? The chief of staff?
Chief of staff.
Yeah. Right. And he's like, I'm working for the president, and I was supposed to keep tabs on CTU. And they're like, dun-dun, and here's basically what happened.
Walt Cummins killed David Palmer. He tried to have me killed.
Even if it's true, we have to build a case before we call the president.
We don't call the president. He's here in California. We go see him now.
Cummings is the president's chief of staff, Jack, and his friend. Without any hard evidence, CTU can't touch him.
I'm not CTU. I'll go get Walt Cummings myself.
Oh, hell yes! I'm excited about that.
I'll go get that jackass myself.
I liked the scene from next week where the helicopters show up. He's like, who'd you call?
Yeah.
Like, I
didn't call anybody.
I don't know who the hell I called.
I called
Yellow Pages.
Johnny Helicopter, taking you anywhere you want to go.
They're taking you on a tour of the Grand Canyon.
So anyway, 24 is an entertaining show, and we'll keep track of it as it goes along. But anyway, guys, let's talk about Battlestar Galactica. This episode is all about the black market. When it starts out, President Roslin is talking about how she doesn't like this black market stuff. People trading, you know, for goods, like for a bottle of
scotch,
space penicillin, you got to trade away like a watch and your whole DVD collection. That's just not fair. So anyway, she gives Apollo the task of playing detective to find out who killed. That's right, Commander Fisk, who took over the Pegasus. What's cool is Bill Duke from the Predator movie has his own henchman with a piano wire.
Watch.
I guess it's a space piano. That was very James Bond-like, wasn't it? James Bond villain, the zzzz from his wrist.
I need to get one.
They did come from Caprica, so you don't think they had pianos there?
Yeah.
What if Movado makes those?
So basically, Bill, what turns out on this show is whenever Apollo goes on leave to Cloud 9, you think he's just doing his laundry and stuff? Nope, he's visiting a prostitute. That's right.
Why would he visit a prostitute? He's got Starbuck.
He
and Starbuck are pals.
Because he likes to just leave when he's done and not have to hold anyone, I think is what it is. And this is much like the Roslin episode where she keeps flashing back to stuff. Apollo keeps flashing back to some girl or something, and throughout the whole episode, it looks like she's really sad, you're not sure what's going on, and then it flashes back to him floating in space. Basically, he's dealing with a lot of stuff while he's on this assignment.
Because he turned down the girl wanting to have a family, and now he's wanting to have a family.
I think she was pregnant.
Yeah.
Or he was, yeah.
I guess.
And he rejected, yeah.
He rejected
like
her.
He was trying to tell him, yeah, she was pregnant.
And he's like, hey, I'm busy, lady.
I want nothing of this.
Yeah, that's what it looks like, and she's all
bummed out.
But now
since his near death, he wants the family.
It's time for a space abortion.
I don't know if he wants a family, but he wants to replace her with that girl who's obviously dead now because she blew up on Caprica, most likely. And, he doesn't really have to do much detective work because Bill Duke shows up to talk to him. They beat up the girl, the prostitute, and the prostitute has a little daughter named Papaya. I guess she's some kind of fruit.
Papaya.
Yeah, Papaya. And there's a great part. He's like, hey, look, Papaya, I brought you a doll. And it has one eye. And she's like, ah!
It's a space doll. It's only got one eye. It's a mutant.
He's like, it's a Cylon doll. He goes, whoa, whoa. But he's like, I'm not very good with kids or whatever. And that what was great, the way the scene sets up, he's laying in bed with this girl, and you're like, oh, hey, Apollo's got himself a girlfriend. And he's leaving, and he whips out his wallet, and he gives her some money. And you realize, oh, this is a space prostitute.
Spent. The money's on the dresser.
Well, no, because when he talks to her, you know, she's saying she needs her daughter's sick. No, her daughter's sick, and she doesn't have the money.
But she is a space prostitute.
But it doesn't look like she's a prostitute because he's giving her money to buy medicine for the kid.
No, because she says, I'm going to have to charge you another $100 because you spent the night. Yeah. I have a clip. Let's check that out.
I heard the security officer. They gave you Fisk's killer for a reason. They're offering you a way out.
You know something, don't you?
Just rumors. There's a freighter, Prometheus. Some people say it's gone off the grid. But if you want something bad enough, that's where you go. The deals are brokered by an ex-military mercenary named Phalen.
Now, Phalen has a pretty rockin' ship, man. He's got not only a bar there, but he's got pretty much like a market there with cigarettes and booze. He basically has everything. He's got medicine. He's got everything. He's controlling the whole fleet. He's much like Jabba the Hutt, only he's black.
And he controls the black market.
Yeah. It's very symbolic. So anyway, Apollo shows up there, and he looks in a hatch, and he sees a girl's daughter. Apparently, they have little kids there for
Kitty
sale.
Porn, yeah.
They have kids for sale on this place.
So it's not much unlike Thailand.
Right. That's basically... It did have kind of a, like, Asian market kind of feel in there, didn't it? People are, like, holding up, like, medicine and pills and cigarettes, and he's like, I'll have none of that. I'm Apollo.
I got penicillin for sale.
So I love this. Apollo goes in there. He walks up. You know, he's not afraid of the henchmen with guns. And basically Bill Duke is saying that, hey, this is the way it is. You know, just accept it. You're not getting the girl back. Just go back to your dad or whatever. And what's cool is he gets the gun from the henchman, and he's like, you're not going to shoot me. You're not that type of person. And he goes, shoots him. But the part that kind of bothered me, you guys, is when he says, all right, guys, it's not over, because I know there'll always be a black market, but we'll be keeping an eye on you. Did that? Were you like, what?
It makes sense to me.
And then he's like, well, he does compromise and say, you know, if anything happens to kids, if
if you touch a single hair on any of these children's heads, and basically, you get they didn't show it, but you know he frees the children, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's what was,
Did you guys notice at the very end, okay, that meeting with Tom Zarek, he said, you know something. And he goes, well, I know of a ship where all the black market stuff happens. Basically, Tom Zarek got Apollo to take out the guy so he could fill his shoes. I think that's what happened.
I think that's what I got from
it. So now Tom Zarek controls all the supplies and stuff like that. And, of course, Rosalind's all mad, like, hey, why'd you do that? And he's like, hey, that's the way it is, baby. That's not the exact dialogue, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, close.
So
that's what it would be if Jason wrote the script.
Yeah.
Hey, baby, just deal with it, Madam President.
Them's
baby.
The breaks, kiddo.
Turns into this 1940s noir thriller.
Yeah, see? The Prometheus, yeah. So, oh, there's also a scene where Rosalind tells Gaius Baltar, the most annoying character on the show lately, that she says, I'll give you an out. Why don't you go back to your science studies, and you don't have to be the vice president anymore. Just resign. And you know why she says this, because she remembers him hanging out with number six. She remembers that, and like when she was out of it. And he's like, I was never interested in politics, but now I am. I was never interested in being vice president, but at this very moment, now I am. And he's telling her, there's no way I'm leaving. So that was a nice little thing there, I guess, showing that he's not going to step down.
It's like, Olsen, where did he get a backbone, you know?
Well, it's because Six is always
yelling. Well, I understand that, but...
And her hair was, like, even blonder than usual, it seemed like, in this episode. Right. I want to talk about something right now, and it's very serious, and that is Sci-Fi Channel's picture quality is horrendous. Oh. It's, like, washed out, black is gray. It's just... I love Battlestar Galactica, but, man, I wish it was better picture quality on that channel. But on that note, we'll talk about Battlestar Galactica next week. All right, Steven busted out the bongos, man. Damn, pretty good at that. Now, Steven, you probably think you're pretty badass, but I can beatbox. Hell yeah! Were you guys pretty impressed by that?
Oh yeah.
Does he do me that way?
What? Hey Vanessa, you ready to do the news?
Come to blows.
Now, Vanessa, before you get started on the news, there's something that I saw recently, and Bill brought it to my attention. Apparently, Britney Spears' husband, Kevin Federline, has put out a song that he's produced, and I thought we'd check it out on the show. Are you guys interested to hear what kind of artistic talent he has?
Oh, yes, please.
Other than mooching off of Britney Spears.
Yeah, he's like, okay, just leave me alone. I got a baby right now. go to the recording studio and go make an album. He's like, oh, cool. I'm into Portuguese culture. I know just what I'm going to do. The song is called Popo Zau. Popo Zau. Let's listen to it.
Popo Zau.
It's pretty awesome.
What the hell? Toy yo yo bang for me, baby. Toy yo yo
bang for me. Toy yo yo bang for me. What the hell?
Toy yo yo bang.
Steven, you gonna buy this? Listen to this. I descend the bubbles out. That genius I do shout. I descend the bubbles out. In Portuguese, it means bring your ass on the floor and we move ass. I want to see a kitty and a little bit of titty. Want to know where I go when I'm in your city. Okay, that's all I can take.
Oh, thank you.
In Portuguese, it means bring your ass. What is he saying, Bill?
And move it real fast.
Now, what's good about this, if you couldn't tell the brilliant lyrics to this, James Lipton on Conan recently read aloud the lyrics, and we can better hear what it is. Let's check this out.
So here to recite some verses from Popo Zau is the host of Inside the Actor's Studio, Mr. James Lipton.
Toil your thing on me, baby. Toil your thing on me. In Portuguese, it means bring your ass on the floor and move it real fast. Girl, don't you worry about all the dough because a cat is coming straight out of the know, ready to rock those shows all the way to Rio.
Nice.
Bring that Brazil booty on the floor. Poe. 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 Popazau. Popazau.
So basically, that's it. It's a horrible song, basically.
In any
if
language.
I was the president or whatever of Brazil, I would ban Kevin Federline.
You will never enter this country. All right, Vanessa, what news stories do you have for us this week?
When it comes to romance, women prefer someone who tickles their funny bone, while men opt for those who catch their eye. The survey, conducted in 16 countries by Canadian romance publisher Harlequin Enterprises, asked men and women on 6 continents about traits they liked or disliked and how they went about trying to meet Mr. or Mrs. Right. The poll revealed many differences between countries in the way people tried to impress the opposite sex. Australians and British men frequently admitted drinking too much, while about half of German and Italian men said they had lied about their finances. Spaniards were the most likely to use sex to catch someone's attention. 80% of Brazilian and Mexican men said they had lied about their marital or relationship status, as did 70% of German women. When it came to meeting that special someone, a majority of respondents preferred to rely on friends for introductions. The internet was not a popular hunting ground, except in Portugal, where about half the
surveyed
men...
Hey! Popo's out, baby!
The Boomtown's return.
Both Spain and France suffered a gender gap. 30% of Spanish men, but no Spanish women, looked for love online. Both sexes rated looks as most important that their counterparts than any other counterpart in any other country.
So shallow.
Yeah. When it came to the first meeting, majority of men polls said beauty was more important than brains, while women put sense of humor at the top of their list. Yee. Physical attraction was the top priority for men in France, Brazil, Greece, Japan, and Britain. And while 40% of Portuguese men rated intelligence over looks in a first encounter, not a single Australian man did so. So in the United States and Canada, humor was considered the most important trait by both men and women, getting 63% and 70%.
Yeah, okay, is this
the
people?
Hell are they kidding?
How do they get this information? Are these the people with clipboards at the mall?
Or is it online?
Well,
polls?
I agree. I can tell you this: myself and many women I know, if a guy has a good sense of humor, bam, it's an attraction right there.
But what if he looks like
Eugene.
Yeah, what if he looks like
no, Eugene's a nice guy. Come on.
Go switch off.
We don't really know what Eugene looks like. But,
what if he looks like Jabba the Hutt?
You know, well, don't you laugh at me, Mulberry Bell.
No, honestly, I've, you know, and I think it has to do with age, too. The younger you are, the more superficial you are.
Right.
And the older you get,
the more desperate you get.
Yeah. Fred. But, sense of humor is a huge attractor for me.
Me too.
I love you. You complete me.
All right, Vanessa, what else do you have?
All right, a 17-year-old male high school student in Boston has filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights, accusing his public school of discriminating against boys. Doug Englund said girls are treated better at Milton High School in Massachusetts and are less likely to be punished and more likely to be encouraged to perform well academically. The complaint in Milton, an affluent Boston suburb, devised the conventional image of American schools giving more attention to boys than girls.
Couldn't he just change schools? No, I mean, seriously. Okay, at every school, aren't boys treated better? Like, they get the fancy uniforms?
Athletes are treated better. The athletic department's treated better. Yes.
So this guy's going to the one school where it's not like that, and he's upset?
Exactly. The one school in the entire United States that's opposite.
Ridiculous.
I'm so scared, baby.
What, is it a girl's school?
Yeah, get out of girl's school.
I think there might be something else to this story.
Exactly.
I bet you anything, he got punished for something, and the girl did the same thing, and he's like, this isn't fair, she should get the same punishment. You know, who knows what it was.
He could be a fagula.
The guy was gay.
Exactly, Foggy. He's crystallized our thoughts perfectly. Hey, about Kevin Federline, by the way.
Ain't no use running, fool, I know where your mama parks your house.
Exactly.
That's not far from the truth.
In Tokyo, police found a stun gun and tear gas Friday at the Tokyo home of a man who said he persuaded 11 younger women to live with him by chanting a spell. Police suspect he used weapons to prevent the women, mainly in their 20s, from leaving. Here goes his name. Hirohito Shibuya.
He was stunning the girls with a stun gun to keep them from leaving.
Not being near to my ability.
He said he was chanting spells and made them stay.
Awesome. But, I need to learn some of that.
Shibuya.
Damn you, Reba Bell!
What? Stop!
Was arrested Thursday for allegedly threatening a 20-year-old woman who was reluctant to join the commune by telling her that if she left, she would be turned into mincemeat. He denied threatening the woman. Kyoto.
Was it specifically mincemeat?
Yes, mincemeat.
You will be turned into mutton if you leave.
Also allegedly told her he was a former senior officer in Japan's military with secret agents around him.
Is this like the Asian version of the CIA when guys try to impress a woman?
I think it's he's the Asian version of David Koresh.
Yeah. Shibuya.
What was the name again, Vanessa?
Hirohito Shibuya. It's Shibuya.
Hirohito Shibuya.
Shibuya. Shibuya, a bald
Papa Zhao
man with bags under his eyes, has attracted heavy media attention this week after claiming he chanted a spell to attract the women. He had married and divorced several of the women who continued to live with him. Asked what the incantation was, he told the newspaper, "When you say it, even unattractive men become attractive, but I won't say it because if I do, I'll die." So
I know what it was. Popozao!
Does he know karate?
But you want to see me kick some ass? I know fucking karate!
All right, Zimbabwe twins who became media celebrities.
Zimbabwe? Hey, we're all over the world this week on the news.
That's right, international. Zimbabwean twins who became media celebrities for appearing in public wearing nothing but traditional African goatskin loincloths have been detained pending trial for indecent exposure.
Ha ha!
Harare, I don't know how you say the city.
But that's why do you pick stories where you can't say their names?
I know.
Interesting story!
Zabubu Shababwe!
Harare, magistrate, Mashud Govabombe.
Stick to around Kansas area news and you'll be able to pronounce everyone's name. Earl Wayne Tucker today robbed a liquor store.
And tried to get away on his tractor.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, the twins said they were making a statement by appearing in traditional African cloth dating back to pre-colonial times. State prosecutors disagreed and lodged a case of indecent exposure against them. And we failed to see how their actions conform to our culture. Dressing of that nature is now reserved for special traditional and cultural occasions. Not everywhere.
What kind of outfits are these? Is this like kind of like you
goat
see their
skin long loincloth.
So you can see their asses pretty much.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm a historian of ass.
What country were they arrested?
Zimbabwe.
All right, here's one. It's in Arkansas. I'll make you happy. A mother accused of smothering her three young children left notes that officials say could help determine what led to the killings. And her priest said Sunday
wow,
that she
what
expressed
a cherry on top.
Paula Elizar Mendez, 43, was in a county jail cell after being treated at a hospital for swallowing a toxic substance. She had collapsed as officers arrived at her home Saturday morning in response to a telephone call from the children's father in New York. Inside the home, the officers found the bodies of the children, ages 6 to 8, lying side by side on a bed. I do not believe there's any dispute as to who killed the children. However, we have not determined at this time the particular homicide charge or punishment we will be seeking. Come on, what else can you do? She murdered him.
Jesus Christ. Vanessa, we're doing a pop culture podcast, and you're reading news stories about a woman that drowned her children.
Obviously didn't listen, she smothered them.
She suffocated them.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry, she suffocated them. The kids are dead.
Maybe she didn't mean to.
Oh, yeah.
She did it in an entertaining way.
Two shitholes.
Thanks for the news there, Vanessa.
You're welcome.
All right, let's move on to DVDs. Bill always has the latest DVDs, and this week I have a new DVD theme song. No, not that. Let's do some DVDs. You up for that, Bill?
Yes.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me.
I don't want to listen to David Hasselhoff. Please.
All right, Bill. This week in DVDs, what do you got for us?
This is another short week. I've only got three DVDs. We have the for January 31st, 2006, the A-Team Season 3. So if you have Season 1 and 2, you might want to complete your set.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, they had to run out there and get...
Oh, no!
So you're telling me the A-Team is out on DVD and I don't own it?
You don't own the first two seasons. This is Season 3.
I know that, dude.
Who, Murdoch?
I love the synopsis on the back. Get ready for more explosive action, adrenaline-pumping thrills, unbelievable A-Team excitement.
That's a great thing.
See guys flip over in Jeeps and crawl out fine.
As all 25 episodes of Season 3 arrive on three double-sided DVDs.
See Murdoch roll a truck and still have the cigar in his mouth.
I always loved about the A-Team. They all have AK-47s and they shoot up things and guys blow up and they flip over, but the guy always crawls out like G.I. Joe.
This is great. It says, in the most popular season ever, Hannibal, Face, Murdoch, and B.A. face off against new criminals with the most outrageous schemes yet, from toxic waste dumping to wild game poaching to restaurant sabotage.
Awesome.
I hate that restaurant sabotage.
Yeah, right.
Happens
right.
All the time.
So if you don't have the first two seasons, you need to get them if you buy Season 3.
Sweet, I'm there.
You got a special deal if I buy all three together?
You never know.
I guess I gotta check my local Best Buy.
No, whoa there, Pickle.
The Dune Extended Edition coming out also, with the two versions, the original theatrical, directed by David Lynch, and the extended version,
oh my God,
by Alan Smithy, and screenplay by Judas Booth.
You've been dicking me around since we started this turd.
It actually has Alan Smithy in the as the credits?
Yeah, it says directed by Alan Smithy and screenplay by Judas Booth.
Wow.
So it has an introduction from Rafael De Laurentiis, about the deleted scenes and the introduction and all that.
Can I just say this about Dune? What a piece of shit.
I know, it really is horrible. For anybody to sit there and go, oh, Dune's a classic, man, it's great. No, it sucks.
Steven, do you have an opinion on Dune?
I love Dune.
You're the man now, dog.
People just need to read the books if they, you know, want to get into it. Because the movie,
But first, you got to study the dictionary in the back of the book so you know what the hell you're
reading.
Isn't
it like the most convoluted thing ever?
Oh,
it really is.
Yeah.
I think the best way it was done was the sci-fi miniseries.
Yeah.
I actually own
it. Costs $100,000.
No, it doesn't.
To make.
Sci-fi original movie. Yeah, the DVD doesn't cost a budget.
Oh, I thought you said the DVD cost $100,000.
No, the budget. They filmed it in the backyard.
Well, it looks better than that, but it's still pretty awful.
They filmed it on a beach, see?
Blue
it was
screen
like
with a lot of flash animation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does have a lot of flash animation.
Flash animation? You have to install Macromedia on your DVD player to watch it.
Yes.
A movie that does not have any flash animation is Tim Burton's Corpse Bride. It is, I think it's stop animation, actually.
Yes.
And it's a special edition widescreen with... What else
did Tim Burton really make this, though? He put his name on it. He didn't do the
animation.
It's
a story by...
Right.
Just like Nightmare Before Christmas. It was a story by...
Inspired by Tim Burton's dreams.
Well, it was directed by Tim Burton and Mike Johnson. I don't know who that is.
Mike Johnson.
Oh, so he didn't have the same guy do the...
No.
Okay.
Is Mike Johnson in the parking lot?
I don't... I think. He might be the guard, the guy that runs the...
He's the guy who played the Predator, who died of pneumonia afterwards. What the hell?
But, yeah, this is another Danny Elfman musical sort of thing. So.
Yeah.
Of course.
Hey,
if you're a fan of Oingo Boingo, rush out and buy
Oingo
it.
Boingo.
Yeah, hey, I mean, hey, I got nothing against Danny Elfman, but...
Love the Danny.
Played
Danny
out.
Elfman.
I was bedraggled.
Isn't he played out, Steven?
No.
The last...
No!
Damn you, Reba Bell!
The thing I was saying was the best and last good Danny Elfman-involved musical film was Nightmare Before Christmas.
That's one of my favorites.
I liked it when I saw it, but I'm never going to watch it again. No offense, Stevens. It was enjoyable.
I watch that almost every year.
Yeah, same here.
Well, hey, maybe you and Steven could get together and watch it.
Yes, Bill.
Okay, that's a little...
Steven will be waiting for that phone call.
That's what...
Steven, go sit by the phone. It may ring one day. Oh, wait, there he is. Come on over.
Does he do me that way?
What other fantastic DVDs are coming out this week?
All the Pink Panther movies are being released on DVD.
Oh, see, this is what it's about. Getting rid of the DVD library.
Different strokes. The complete second season.
Now that I will pick up.
Kathy.
Oh, what season has Kathy on it? The little crippled girl with short legs. We go. Gosh, you tanking.
What about the what about the adopted white kid?
Danny Cooksey.
Oh, Danny Cooksey is dead.
Four weddings.
They always have him sing. It's like, shut up, kid.
Oh, do you remember Hoyt Axton was his dad, and he would sing like some country tune all of a sudden?
Did he buy him a Mogwai?
Yeah. Whatever you do, don't ever
play country music after midnight.
For the fans of the E Channel, we have the Gastineau Girls complete first season.
Oh,
did
Jesus.
Anyone watch the first season?
I don't think so. Okay, here's another DVD for you people. In Her Shoes, widescreen edition. I mean,
oh,
really
with Cameron Diaz.
Cameron Diaz, Toni Collette, and Shirley MacLaine.
Shirley MacLaine, I like her.
That movie came out like 3 months ago, didn't it?
Okay.
Now she thinks she's from outer space.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
You know what she's probably happy about is she was the crackpot in Hollywood, but Tom Cruise took over the reins for her.
Yeah.
You're out on a limb, and you can do astral project around Earth and space. All right, Bill, you got any more DVDs this week?
The Legend of Zorro, widescreen edition, the... most recent Zorro movie where he's a kid.
Which we can't figure out why they've made it.
Antonio Banderas one?
Directed by Martin Campbell, I think.
Yeah, the greatness of Martin Campbell.
Magnum P.I., the complete third season.
Higgins.
Man, what are they, just cleaning out the TV
TV vault?
Library.
They really are. That's why I'm saying there's just nothing but crap coming out.
Do you got anything else for us this week, Bill?
No, that's it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bill. Now, when we're doing serious or those comedic DVD things and you bring up Magnum P.I., which is a serious show, I don't appreciate that.
You couldn't say that with a straight face.
All right, I'd like to thank everybody for listening to The Disaster. That was episode 22. The Double Deuce!
Double Deuce.
The Double Deuce. That's right.
And please send us your child death story.
You gotta be shitting me.
Go to nowhereinmulberry.com where you could see our number there, 1-206-202-3491. Send us a voicemail. Not you, Eugene. Somebody else send us a voicemail. If you have any fan fiction, please submit it to Vanessa's area on the message board.
Great.
There, Vanessa will be happy to critique your fan fiction. Maybe
and
you can
possibly
do some...
act it out with you on Skype.
Yeah, how about some Nowhere in...
She prefers erotic fan fiction.
How about some Nowhere in Mulberry fan fiction? You're here in the studio with us. You're a new member to the show. It'd be great.
You know, don't you laugh at me, Mulberry Bell.
Email at nimpodcast@gmail.com. Well, guys, I want to thank you all for being here this week for Nowhere in Mulberry episode 22. We haven't killed each other yet.
Thank you.
And on that note, see you next week.
Casting.